on our docket is concerns the water right of the city of Aurora, and the opposers ACJ Partnership and others. We are ready to hear from the appellant. Now, before you get started, I should tell you that Justice Hyde is not participating in this case.
Good morning, Your Honor. Members of the court, I'm Steve Sims from Brownstein Hyatt Farber Schreck. I represent the city of Aurora. With me at council table is my co-counsel, Mr. Adam DeVoe. Aurora appealed this matter because the water court improperly applied the Cannonwheel provisions to delete three of Aurora's proposed Prairie Waters Project reservoir sites. The part of the Prairie Waters, this part of the Prairie Waters Project involves Aurora's claim for 46,400 acre foot junior storage right. The water court granted Aurora its entire 46,400 acre foot claim, but only allowed Aurora to store this water in five of the eight sites it originally sought. The water court made four key mistakes in this case. First, the court did not correctly apply the finality requirement of the Cannonwheel provisions when it ignored the fact that neither Rangeview nor the land board had made a final denial of access to the disputed reservoir sites. Second, the court wrongfully considered the lease between Rangeview and the land board to be a final denial of access in and of itself. Third, the court erred when it made a finding that relocation of Rangeview's right-of-way would cause material adverse effect to Rangeview's rights. The court made this factual finding on summary judgment in the face of conflicting facts and affidavits filed by Aurora. Finally, the court incorrectly found that the land board could not grant Aurora an overlapping reservoir site because doing so would unreasonably interfere with Rangeview's rights.
Well, can I ask you a question at the threshold here, because the speculation and the Cannonwheel test are kind of maybe intertwined in this case. Why would Aurora need so many reservoirs and that many? Wouldn't it indicate that that's kind of speculative about where they're going to store and how much they're going to store and what reservoir? Why would the court be in a position to actually decree that many storage sites?
Your Honor, there are 26 parties that appeared in this case, and not one raised speculation as a ground. No one considers the fact that Aurora will not divert the 46,400 acre feet that they claim. Frankly, they needed the eight sites, two are existing, and so there's six potential sites for what we call the East Reservoir, East Reservoirs. And really, at this point, Aurora is not sure which of those sites it will be able to acquire. There are issues, obviously, with Lowry Range that they've been negotiating for 3 years to try and acquire the site that they prefer in the Lowry Range. But if not, they have some backup positions and backup reservoir sites that they will use.
So why is the one on the Lowry Range the preferred reservoir? And remind us what size that would be. Would it be the whole of the 46,000 acre feet?
Well, actually, in the decree in this case that was granted by the court, Aurora specified that only 25,000 acre feet of the 46 would be stored in the East Reservoir. And we say sites or sites. It may be one or two. Frankly, though, the size of the reservoir will probably be 60,000 acre feet. And so most of the water that will be stored in this reservoir will not be junior water. It will be reusable water as part of the Prairie Waters Project that's pumped back from Brighton. And so it would probably that the preferred site is the one right next to Aurora Reservoir. And you can see the logistics when you look at the map, that to have two of your main reservoirs side by side makes a lot of sense, because the biggest cost in building some of these reservoirs is the pipe that connects them all.
So is the Aurora Reservoir on or near the Lowry site?
Yes, it's right next to it.
Right next
to it.
Okay.
Right next. Matter of fact, the city of Aurora does have a right-of-way on portions of the Aurora Reservoir that it got from the state land board.
Okay. So Rangeview is a water supply district that is tied to a possible development which may not occur. Is that correct, because the developer is now pulled out?
Well, that's certainly an issue outside the record, but and they're still trying to put that deal back together. But the land board runs the Lowry Range. in 82, and then again in 96, it did a lease with Rangeview to develop the groundwater and surface water resources on Lowry Range. And as part of that, Rangeview had to agree that they would be able to provide water service when the day came that there was development at the Lowry Range.
Okay.
There's a question as to whether it's whether there's exclusivity or not, and how much of the range is going to be developed. But when the land board decided that they were going to develop the Lowry Range, they picked out six sections of land out of the 40-some that are out there, and said, this is the part that we're going to develop. We're going to keep the rest in either conservation or in reservoir storage, and let Lend-Lease be the lead to develop those six parcels. Two of those parcels are outside the Rangeview District. Four of them are inside the Rangeview District. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a picture of how that comes together.
Thank you.
Well, let me, as long as we're on the facts, and they've interrupted you anyway, doesn't Rangeview have a very long-term contract with the land board, like 90 or 100 years?
That's correct. In 1996, the amended lease was, you know, they redid the lease, and that the term of that lease is 99 years.
And how does that play into this issue about whether Aurora has any ability to develop the reservoir sites you're talking about?
Well, the water court mistakenly said in its order that Aurora was just proposing to wait to the termination of the lease, and that's when they would build the reservoir. Aurora has never taken that position. And Aurora believes that even though Rangeview will have a role at the Lowry land for as much as 99 years, they'll certainly still develop all the groundwater resources, could still have at least three reservoir sites, and possibly all four if there was a co-location involved. But Rangeview will be involved out there for 99 years. There's no doubt about that, but Aurora thinks that they can coexist with them, that they can negotiate a solution with them. We're both, you know, in the words of Rangeview's manager, have a win-win solution where both parties can operate their water rights on the same property at the same time.
Well, any solution for Aurora will involve agreement by Rangeview. Is that not correct?
That's certainly the way the land board wants to see it at this point. In their order, their 0763 order, where they recognize Rangeview's rights, they said at this time we can't grant you Aurora access, but they encouraged Aurora to go forward to continue negotiations to help to resolve the water development and conservation issues surrounding the Lowry Range development. And their instruction was, come up with a holistic agreement where we can reconcile the rights of the parties and all these issues, and when you do that, that's how you get access.
So it's why isn't Rangeview's opposition at this time a final denial?
Well, it's not a final denial because they have never specifically said you're finally denied. They've never taken that action. Remember the Blackhawk Central City case that was before you. In that case, Central City actually filed passed a resolution from their council that said you're denied access to our reservoir. And they fought Blackhawk on Cannon Will grounds, and the court had a trial on whether there was actual final denial caused by that resolution. And the court said, you know, that resolution was non-binding, and it's something that could be changed by future councils. So even though you specifically said no and fought all the way on the Cannon Will, we're going to say you didn't actually finally deny. And so that's why we don't think that they have finally denied, because they haven't said it. And what they have told us is that they want to work out a deal. And
the trial judge heard that exact argument and said he didn't think Blackhawk was very analogous. In fact, he thought that the facts of this case were not like Blackhawk at all. Why was he wrong?
Well, I think that they're exactly like Blackhawk. And I think they're exactly like Blackhawk because there's an issue there's no doubt in both cases there is a denial. The question is it a final denial? And the court, in this case, ignored the comments of both Rangeview and the land board and instead just focused their entire analysis on, well, there's a final denial, they said, because there's this lease. And because of the lease, they said, that's all we need to know.
I think the trial judge was a little more sophisticated than that. He said, if I'm looking at this right, that Aurora must wait and see if Rangeview fails to exercise its rights under the lease, or the lease agreement is terminated or ends, or the lease is not renewed at the end of 2081. But that's a lot more nuanced than the argument that you seem to be making here.
Well, actually, it's different reasons. But, you know, I have to tell you, Justice Rice, there's no support for that. Aurora never said...
Okay, well, that's a different argument. So you say that the judge's findings are not based in any fact.
That's correct.
But those were indeed his findings.
That's correct. He did find that, but he did also he also had a number of findings about finality. And essentially, and especially in the order on reconsideration, he said, it doesn't make any difference to me that the land board says that they've not done a final denial.
Well, counsel, in my mind, it's a different case if we're arguing about whether the judge's facts are incorrect than if we're arguing about whether the judge's law is incorrect.
Well, I think his ruling was really an evaluation of the facts. But yes, I'd say the facts are incorrect, Your Honor. There is nothing in the record to say where Aurora ever said, we're going to wait to the end of a 99-year lease before we're going to take over.
Well, once again, you're failing to understand the nuance of the trial judge's opinion, which I just read to you. It seems to be quite multifaceted, as opposed to just saying that you're not going to take this over until 2081.
Right, they said that.
So what exactly was totally without factual support in the judge's opinion?
Well, the portion that Aurora is going to wait till 1999.
Okay, but the rest of it has factual support because he made those alternative holdings.
There is factual support for the holding that Aurora has to make a deal with Rangeview and the land board. That is, it's stipulated. That is something that we agree with. That's something that Aurora's affidavit said that we're in the process of doing.
Well, let me just actually ask you this. So is there factual support for this finding? Aurora must wait and see if Rangeview fails to exercise its rights under the lease agreement?
No, there's not. But
okay. Let me ask you one more question. Is there factual support for this finding, or Rangeview, the Aurora must wait to see if the lease agreement is terminated or ended?
Well, I mean, that's certainly one way to do it. Aurora never argued that.
Okay. Okay.
That's what they're...
So your factual understanding of this case, a good way to put it, is just totally different than the trial judge's.
Not totally. We certainly disagree with those two elements.
Those are the crux of the trial judge's order. I mean, that's the basis of his order.
I actually didn't think that it was. I thought that was a minor part of his order.
Well, that has to do with the canon will aspect of this.
Your Honor, I think one of the things that the judge was confused about was this whole wait-and-see doctrine. He really seemed to premise a lot on what he thought was a doctrine of wait-and-see, that if any time that a party has to wait for some future event to occur, that somehow disqualifies you from showing canon will. And that's just not right. Wait-and-see was a kind of a catchphrase that Justice Dabowski used in Southeastern versus Florence many years ago to kind of distinguish between the old way that conditional water rights were decreed and the new way after the canon will provisions were adopted in 1979. And essentially, canon or wait and see was just the old way of saying all we need to do is show an intent and a first step, and then everything else works its way out. From 79 on, once the canon will provisions were adopted in law, the General Assembly wanted an applicant to show more. They wanted to show that there was a substantial probability that you would actually divert and put the water to use. And I think the water court got confused by the use of that terminology, wait and see. and basically it said whenever you have to wait a period of time and depend upon an uncertain result, that disqualifies you. That's not the way that the Cannonwell doctrine has been developed. And so really when they say wait and see, that's really an indication of a bad analysis on Cannonwell grounds. You as a court have adopted much more sophisticated and refined rules on Cannonwell than that.
Mr. Sims, can I ask you a couple of questions following up on what Justice Rice said? Because I read the order, Judge Klein's order, a little differently, and maybe I'm wrong, because I wonder about your answers to her. But first of all, I thought a lot of the questions that Justice Rice was asking you were strictly interpretations of law that the judge made based on the lease. Now, is that wrong?
I think that's true.
And if that's true, then we would review that de novo, correct?
That's correct.
But the issue is really finality. Isn't that right?
Well, now I'm confused, if I can join in. Is it law or is it fact?
I think that the application, there is application of laws to fact.
Well, which is wrong here?
Justice Rice, may I ask a question, maybe clear it up. If there are facts, if there's facts in the record that Lowry is not going to ever, there's a statement in the record or an affidavit or whatever, that they're never going to execute or agree with Aurora to work out some sort of deal, then it clearly becomes a fact, right?
That's correct.
All right. So is that clear? Is there something in the record like
that?
There's
that's
an indication.
True.
Is this really like the Elk Creek case where it takes an act from Congress?
No, actually Elk Creek was when a special use permit was denied by the Forest Service. It was Dave Miller's NECO case where you needed an act of Congress. But basically this isn't like that. I mean, what we have here is a question of finality. Was there a final no?
Well, I understand that. But finality can be both law and fact.
That's
and
absolutely
so,
true.
And so
that's
I think, correct. First of all, you have to look at what are the facts. You have the lease. The lease speaks for itself.
That's correct.
But then you have to have some evidence about who acts on.
There's a
and
lease.
As Justice Martinez pointed out, it's obviously range view. Is that the right term? Range views. They're the ones that control.
Well,
right?
I disagree with you there.
Why?
And that's that is a lease interpretation issue, because the land board did not grant an exclusive easement, and the rights of way that the land board granted to Rangeview are subject to relocation under paragraph 11.1 in the lease. As a result, both the land board and Rangeview have a say in the outcome of how this reservoir site is used. And that's exactly what the land board found in its order when it said, you know, we've got legal obligations with Rangeview. We want you to go out and do a deal with them. And we want you to resolve these three things before we can grant you access.
And so, here's what intrigues me about this fact situation and whether this is really a matter of fact or law before us or a mixed matter, which would still be perhaps under the legal conclusion doctrine rather than deference to the findings of fact of the water court, and that is that there are three overlapping reservoir sites on this map, correct?
That's correct.
So it's certainly possible in these scenarios, let's assume the land board is actually encouraging these two public districts to agree upon a joint reservoir or maybe use of the different sites. Would it be true, first of all, that the land board is open to construction of reservoirs any place on these three different sites?
I don't know that all places on the sites would be conducive to building a reservoir, but I don't think that.
Well, my question is, has the land board precluded use of any of those three sites? Let's assume Rangeview picks one or two of them, would still leave a site for Aurora if it were feasible, correct?
That's correct.
Even if there weren't a joint reservoir?
That's correct.
If there were an agreement on a joint reservoir because one site is preferable and could accommodate both public districts, that would put us into the central city Blackhawk scenario, would it not? But even if you couldn't agree on a joint reservoir, it appears that there is a possibility here that Rangeview would not occupy all three sites and that one or more might be available. Is that correct or not?
I completely agree. You look at the range use reservoirs, one's 6,200 acre feet, one's 10,000 acre feet, and one's 4,500 acre feet. They all rely upon either filling the reservoir with groundwater from that Denver Basin groundwater from that site, or the flows in Box Elder Creek and the other small ephemeral streams out there that are dry most of the time. So it's fairly likely that there's not going to be enough water resources out there to even fill all three of these reservoirs.
If it was solely the Denver Basin groundwater that's being put in there.
That's correct. I don't want to mislead you, because they also do have the right, if they are able to bring in water from other sources, to build a pipeline in to use the reservoirs to put that in. But their decrees are just in those small amounts.
Okay.
Mr. Sims, can I ask a question over here now? Let me just ask generally, because of this discussion, then what do you take at the can and will test requires you to show in this context?
I think in the case where you have governmental control of property, and the issue is whether an applicant can get control of that property, I think in the Voight Stucker Mesa case, this court correctly summarized the status of the law. And the status of the law is that in that situation where the private condemnation statute cannot be used, you have to, if you are not foreclosed from using that on can and will grounds, until there is a final denial. So governmental owned, there's a denial, and the denial has to be final.
And so is this a sort of an exception to language we've used in the past, where we've talked about having to show a substantial probability that you'll be able to complete the project within a reasonable time?
I don't think it's really an exception. It's refinement, and
it seems
the purpose here, and this is what we sometimes call shadow permitting. It's very, very difficult for the court to make a determination as to what some other decision maker is going to do in the future. And so in those situations, like with a federal permit, or in this case with the land board, if there's a process where you can get to yes, and if you are involved in the process, and as long as there's no legal impediment to you getting to the final goal, as there was in the NECO case, or as there was in the West Elk case, as long as there's a process, you're involved, you haven't gotten a no at this point, a final no, then that's all you have to show. But to try and guess what that decision maker is going to be on granting your permit, or in this case, making a deal to use the reservoir, to share a reservoir, that requires too much, because there's no way that you can really know, and it's frankly none of the court's business to second guess another decision maker.
And so with regard to this sort of limited part of a permit or acquiring access to the site, and there, the reason I suggest that it sounds to my ear like an exception, and maybe that's what we've done, is we seem to be saying, instead of you showing a substantial probability that you will complete the project on time, with regard to this question of permit or access, you're saying what our law says is the other side, those who are opposing you, have to show there's no possibility of you acquiring access. Is that right, what you mean by a final denial?
Well, Justice Coates, I don't think it is good law to shift the burden in this case to an opposer, to make them prove something. This is my case. It's my burden of proof. I have to show.
What did you show?
Pardon me?
What did you show, Mr. Sir?
I showed that there was a process. There's a process where we could get to yes. And there's a process that we were actively involved in. And there's a process that where we had not gotten a final denial, and in fact had been encouraged by the decision makers to continue on and to keep negotiating and keep working things out.
Let me just ask you a question about perspective in terms of process and the concept of finality. We this discussion has been engaged a little bit as if the finality that is not there, that we are searching for non-existence, comes from range view. Is that correct? Or is the process not from the land board? And should we be looking at the land board's, the form of the communication is unclear to me at the moment, but the land board's communication, which seems to say either we cannot or we will not give any authorization now, but because we're precluded but keep working with the source of our preclusion, and if you can get them to agree, maybe you can remove our inability. That sounds like the finality of process. So my questions are, is that the right perspective?
Looking
to the land board. And secondly, what would the land board have to say to meet your finality test?
Okay. First of all, you have the process exactly right. The first thing you have to figure out is who can say yes. And we struggled in the trial court level on that. I think if you have a fair reading of the lease, and you can review that lease de novo, I think a fair reading of the lease is that the land board has the right to unilaterally relocate these yet-to-be-built-upon right-of-ways. I think the land board has the right unilaterally to grant an overlapping easement because all they've given Rangeview is a non-exclusively easement. However, because the 96 lease grew out of litigation, because there has been other litigation between these two parties, the land board is understandably cautious. And they say, we don't want to take a unilateral approach to this at this time. We have these legal obligations out there to Rangeview. Aurora, if you want to get your reservoir site, go work out a deal. So you're right, Justice Martinez. You are a situation, who's the decision maker? Here, I think you can fairly say both are the decision makers. You will need the consent of both to go forward. Secondly, is there a process? And again, the land board laid out that process and the parts of it that they wanted to see. Water, conservation, development issues, all rolled into this. And then finally, is there a no? Are we like the West Elk case? Are we like the NECO case? Where some governmental entity has said, no, fine, permission denied, there's no chance for appeal, I'm not going to reconsider this, don't come back, we're never going to see you again. That is finality.
I think there are two parts to your argument about lack of finality in terms of
yes.
the land board's action.
Mm-hmm.
And the second part, if you will, seems to be they've said negotiate, and so that's a process that they are allowing to remain open.
And encouraging.
The first part of it seems to be that their unwillingness to take some action unilaterally, you seem to be describing as no finality in that either. They're not saying they won't do that. They're just saying that's not their preference.
That's correct. That's
so is that what we have to analyze, that lease and that communication, in terms of how definite is the we don't want to do this unilaterally? Well, the lease in terms of mm-hmm. can they do it unilaterally?
Correct.
Their communication in terms of how definite is that?
Correct.
And then try to consider the encouragement, using your words, of negotiation and whether that's an open process. That's what you would have us inquire.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And had we gotten our trial in this matter, we would have put on proof that would have showed the attitude of those two decision makers at saying, no, it's not final. Yes, we want you to continue to negotiate. Yes, we want you to keep working with us.
Isn't that sort of a troublesome test in terms of, I mean, if that's the test that we've set forth or that we mm-hmm. continue to enunciate after this decision, isn't that rather troublesome? And you're talking about a trial that goes really into the negotiations, not only of the land board and Aurora, but indirectly anyone else that may have. That seems very intensely specific and very intrusive in terms of the negotiation process.
Well, actually, I don't think you need to get into the details of the negotiation. I think you just need to say, is there a negotiation? You know, are the parties still talking? And has a final decision been made?
Well, let me follow up on that then. Would it be your position that so long as you can show the parties are still talking, you'll be meeting the Cannon Will test until 2081?
Yes.
So if they keep talking, that's okay until 2081?
Justice Rice, yes, it means there's no final denial. But if you haven't gotten any progress by 2081, you're not going to be satisfying your diligence requirements.
Well,
so there's a check on it every 6 years under the statute. In any event, if you got a conditional decree to see what the status is, and if there's a final no, Is there such a terminology in the English language? In other words, there's a check on this.
Yeah.
If the trial court were to grant the conditional decree.
Yes.
And the Cannon Will test, part of it is met already because apparently there's no contest that Aurora has the water or rights to the water that they could put in the structure. And that's an important part of Cannon Will, is it not?
Yeah, there's no speculation involved here. They proved it up. They've been granted the decree.
One more question, if I may, and that is, so for there to be a final no by your argument, the land board would have to say, we won't do this unilaterally, or we read our lease as not permitting us to do this unilaterally, and no, we really mean it. We don't care if you negotiate or not.
Exactly.
That would be a final no?
Exactly what the Division of Wildlife and the land board did in the FWS case. It's exactly what they did. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Frederick Fendell. I represent the Rangeview Metropolitan District. Mr. Matthew Poznanovic is with me at the council table this morning. Let me just jump in to the discussion that you've been having with Mr. Sims. I think the differences that we have are in large part illustrated by the colloquy you've been having. The questions, Aurora has argued that, it's not argued, we're going to wait and see to the end of the lease in 2081. Aurora has said the land board can let us in now. The land board has the authority unilaterally to allow the city to have a right-of-way that either overlaps with Rangeview's existing rights-of-way for its reservoirs, or it can simply move Rangeview out of the way as an inconvenience to the city of Aurora through the relocation provisions. Both of those rights are not available to the land board. They don't have the ability unilaterally to act, and have said so in their order, and the water court, I believe, correctly interpreted the lease as precluding that. We can talk about, I would like to talk about those things. I would like to talk about so the non-exclusivity, the relocation. I would like to talk about finality as well.
Okay, when you do that, would you also address the issue that your conditional rights, do you have conditional decrees on these three possible sites?
Yes, sir.
Okay, that you have to meet the diligence period, and it's possible that you may not be able to show diligence for one or more of these sites?
We have to, as every conditional water right holder does, prove diligence every 6 years. We also, as every conditional water rights holder has, have a current finding that precludes argument on the issue that Rangeview can and will complete these
Well, that's not precisely my question. My question is, during the long life of this lease, almost a century.
Yes.
Isn't it possible that you may, in effect, not be able to show diligence or abandon or partially abandon one or more of these sites?
That is always possible. It's unlikely as long as there is the possibility of use of the water. The Rangeview has, under the lease, both the obligation to provide water service to development that occurs on the Lowry Range, and the right to use the water that it has leased and appropriated together with the state to provide service to others off of the Lowry Range. So the existing conditional water rights that you're asking about for these reservoirs are for use on the Lowry Range. That is the place of use in the decree. And as long as there's the developer, you asked the question about the developer pulling out. The developer pulled out. The land board still has this large tract of land out there, the biggest asset that it has in all of its holdings in the state of Colorado, and its obligations under the school trust to produce revenue from that land. There will be development on the Lowry Range, and Rangeview will be there to provide.
Yeah, but you don't know the nature and extent of the development as to, and whether all of these three sites are exclusively needed by your client, correct?
The nature and extent of development is, of course, to be determined. The place of use on the Lowry Range is known. The need for the reservoirs, the conditional water right, well, let me back up. The reservoirs are needed for a lot of things. They are needed for the conditional water rights that Rangeview holds. These are junior water rights on ephemeral streams, flood rights, basically. When it rains, they will have the ability to put water in storage. That requires a lot of storage to produce a given amount of usable water each year for development. So the storage is all needed. That was shown in the in granting the decree for the conditional water rights for that purpose. The storage will also be used to store other water rights as well. Or, I'm sorry, water from other sources, from groundwater or offsite rights as well.
One of the things that seems to somewhat clear to me, at least as you know, as your arguments have gone forward, is that this is not the kind of matter that should have been disposed of on summary judgment. Why shouldn't we just send it back, tell the trial court, try this, sort it out? We're not very good at sorting out all these facts.
Because there is no genuine issue of material fact. This is a case that can be decided as a matter of law. The factual issues that Aurora contends are here, are the most important ones are on the ability of the land board unilaterally to grant Aurora an overlapping right-of-way and for the parties to coexist in a reservoir big enough to share. There is no factual issue involved in that and no power of the land board to do that. The ability of the land board to relocate. Let me talk about those things and go into those, I think, in some detail. The claim that the land board has the ability to grant an overlapping right-of-way does not fit with the way this court has developed the law of non-exclusive rights-of-way for reservoir storage. It is something that can be and was determined as a matter of law, and in fact, it's the Empire Club case that provides the law that shows that the land board, as the servient landowner, no longer has the right to give Aurora an overlapping reservoir. We also see that in the facts. We see that in the agreement of the two parties to the lease, Rangeview and the land board, that the land board does not retain that right. The land board's order that is in the record does not say we aren't going to give Aurora access to the reservoir without Rangeview's consent. It says we cannot. And the two parties to the lease agree that that is the case. The land board cannot unilaterally grant access. Aurora's argument is the land board can grant us an overlapping right-of-way. As a servient landowner, it retains the right to grant uses that do not unreasonably interfere with Rangeview's use. And if it does, then it's a factual question of whether the interference is reasonable or unreasonable. But you don't get there because the parties to the lease agree that the servient landowner, the land board, does not retain that right and cannot grant Aurora that right. That's correct. That is the correct interpretation of the law of non-exclusive easements for water storage. And we see that in the Empire Club case. The Empire Club case required the court to consider the relative rights between the servient landowner and the holder of a non-exclusive easement for reservoir water storage. The question there was whether the servient landowner retained the right to make recreational use of the surface of the water. The conclusion of the court was based on what was that is not a right retained by the servient landowner, that use would unreasonably interfere with the reservoir owner's rights. The basis of that was the court's holdings that the extent of the landowner's interest is defined by the rights that are granted to the reservoir owner, the easement holder, and that as between the two, the servient landowner on the one hand and the reservoir easement holder on the other, it is the reservoir owner who has the right to control water that is put into storage in the reservoir. Now, what does it mean to control the water that's in storage? Fundamentally, the court hasn't explored all the outer edges and the nuances of that right, but the right to control water fundamentally has to include the right to keep it in storage or let it out, to control the outlet of the dam. And that's what the discussion in the Empire Club case was about. The water level fluctuates because the reservoir owner has the right to either hold the water or let it out. Aurora contends that the land board can grant it a right of way that would give Aurora equal control of the outlet. It would give Aurora a second set of keys to the outlet works. And the Empire Club case tells us, as a matter of law, that the servient landowner does not have the right to open and close the outlet. And if the servant landowner doesn't have it, it cannot grant it to Aurora.
Well, that's a little mysterious to me. There are plenty of structures that have joint use agreements, and that seems to be a wave of the future when it's so hard to build reservoirs in the first place, where, let's say, Rangeview might have a priority in the operation of it, and then under an operating agreement, let's say, and then Aurora would have an ability to store in such a way that and release that would not disturb Rangeview's rights. Now, wouldn't that be a possibility to negotiate?
There are, as you observe, many reservoirs where there are joint owners, and there are agreements that have been entered. The question that is posed by Aurora's argument is whether the land board retains the right to grant it that over Rangeview's
objection. Well, I understand, but here's a statutory provision that concerns me that hasn't come up yet. And this has to do with reservoirs in 3787-101. And basically it says here, state agencies shall, to the maximum extent practicable, cooperate with persons desiring to acquire real property for water storage structures. Now that provision is a pretty plain statement. At first, I think, I'm asking for your reaction to the importance of reservoirs. The importance of state agency cooperation, it says maximum extent practicable, cooperate with persons desiring to acquire real property interests for storage. Now, why isn't that an indication in this can and will context, in fact, that if the negotiations can proceed and there's not a final no, that we're right in the ballpark of continuing to explore this issue, either of a joint reservoir or separate reservoirs on these sites? Your response?
The statute requires state agencies to cooperate to the maximum extent practicable, and the state agency here, the land board, has cooperated with Rangeview in contracting to grant it rights of way, and in doing so has limited its ability to cooperate with others as to the same sites. It is no longer free to simply decide, we, the state, are going to allow Aurora access to the sites we have already contracted to grant to Rangeview. So, to the extent practicable, it's no longer practicable for the landowner as the servient, or the land board as the servient landowner, to grant conflicting rights to others. The land board has, as Mr. Sims points out again and again, encouraged the parties to negotiate. But that's not what we are dealing with here. What we are dealing with here is Aurora's obligation, burden of proof, as the applicant for a conditional water right, to show a substantial probability that it can and will obtain access and complete the appropriation. And it cannot do that based on the argument that the land board can simply unilaterally move Rangeview out of the way or grant an overlapping right. The land board no longer has that authority.
Well, might it not be in the economic interest of Rangeview itself to have a joint agreement with a city that has the financial ability to help build this reservoir to a size that could accommodate both if it's one site? Wouldn't that be in the interest of your water users and ratepayers?
It is possible that that could happen. It is always possible that the board of the directors of the Rangeview Metropolitan District, having considered this, could change their minds. It was possible in the FWS case that the Division of Wildlife could have changed its mind, but there's no evidence that it can or will. And Aurora relies very heavily on the Blackhawk case to say, well, here's a situation where the city council said no, but they could have changed their minds, and therefore anybody can, and effectively eviscerate any no that's been gotten, because any agency can change its mind. But what we have here. On the facts that we have presented, we have an affidavit from a director of Rangeview saying we need those reservoirs to meet our contractual obligations, and we are not going to relinquish rights under the lease or modify our rights under the lease. We have a conflicting affidavit from one of the staff members at Aurora saying, well, we talked to them for 3 years. 3 years, by the way, during the time that this case has been pending. So all of this is settlement negotiations, and in settlement negotiations, Rangeview never said never. Those affidavits don't actually even conflict. One is looking backward. Aurora's is looking backward, so they hadn't said never up to now, and Rangeview's is looking forward. We need those, and we're not going to agree simply to let Aurora in and share the reservoir.
Mr. Fendell, can I ask you? In Blackhawk, they actually had a trial, and so there was some evidence that was introduced that was a little easier determine what was final and what was not quite final. And in your case here, what if we assume your contract arguments are correct, the issue, at least as I see it, is how final is your negotiating stand? And what bothers me a little bit about it is if Aurora came around tomorrow or this afternoon and gave you enough money, you might find it in your interest to have a joint project. Isn't that right?
Let me give you two responses to that. Second one first. Rangeview's door is always open to settlement. We are happy to talk settlement anytime, anywhere. But if it turns out in this case that the willingness to talk settlement prejudices our position, that'll be the last time that is our position. And I suggest that other parties might adopt that same position, and that would be a disaster in terms of public policy.
I'm sorry, maybe I didn't hear you. Say that again?
Your question was if they showed up tomorrow with a big check and said, here's
right.
all the money you want for your reservoir right. site, can we have it?
And why is that a bad
My response to that is that's a settlement negotiation. And if my willingness to engage in settlement negotiation prejudices my position, then I'm no longer willing to engage in those negotiations. And I think that that would be the result of that kind of a holding, and that would be just a public policy disaster.
Well, the holding would be that that this should go back for a trial to determine how final is.
Well, wouldn't the trial, though, just involve a discussion of settlement negotiations?
It certainly would.
What else would happen at the trial?
You asked a question before about going, or Justice Martinez asked the question, wouldn't that set us up to be going into a trial on the issue of what's going on in settlement negotiations? Most of what we're talking about would not be admissible.
Well, do you feel that the trial judge's findings that there's no conflict about the terms of the lease, there's no conflict about the land board and Rangeview's position are all supported by the affidavits?
Yes.
Is there any question of fact with respect to those salient issues?
With respect to the interpretation of the lease, no, there is not. Aurora, who is a stranger to the lease, attempts to inject factual disputes where there are none between the actual parties.
And the factual disputes which you think Aurora is attempting to insert are what are the nature of the settlement negotiations and how likely is it that we will reach a settlement which will allow us to build these reservoirs?
Yes.
But nothing more? Is there anything else that's factual out there?
The other issue, which gets back to Justice Bender's question about how final, is that Aurora attempts to say is a factual issue is exactly that one. Is how final is final? And in this case, let me talk about the Central City case and compare that to the situation that we have here. In Central City, the city of Blackhawk was the applicant. Was an applicant for a conditional water storage right for an enlargement of an existing reservoir that was owned by its neighbor, the city of Central. And shortly before a trial, the Central City Council passed a rather vague resolution that didn't really address Blackhawk or the reservoir, just said the city's not going to allow third parties access to real property interests for water rights that aren't Central City's water rights. And the argument was, is that a final denial of access to Blackhawk or not? There was indeed a trial on the issue. It was a contested issue of fact. The mayor of Central City testified and conceded the well-known principle of municipal law that sort of a resolution by the council cannot bind future councils. They are free to change their minds. And the water court found that denial was not final, found that Blackhawk had indeed proven its case that it can and will get access or that there was a substantial probability of it. That was reviewed here in this court as a finding of fact based on disputed evidence. So the holding of this court in the Central City case was that the finding by the trial court that was not a final denial was not so clearly erroneous as to find no support in the record. That hardly creates a sweeping precedent for application in other factual situations. It was very fact-specific with a very low bar.
Well, I'm very interested in your analysis of that case because it seems to me that there's also a broader encompassing setting there, and that was the fight between two public districts over the same site when it was possible, maybe even likely, that despite their animosities for each other and their attempt to monopolize the gaming industry into their town, they could actually cooperate for the public purpose in producing a reservoir site through a joint agreement that would serve both of them. Isn't that really kind of the point of what the court said ultimately in that case?
I think that goes well beyond the analysis of what's actually written in the court. Certainly, there may be elements between the lines.
Well, you see, we were asked, though, to decide, you know, who could condemn who, and it was going to be a continual round of condemnation, which would have damned any kind of possible cooperation.
Well, let's compare that to this situation. In this situation, we have neither party, neither Rangeview nor the land board, has the freedom that Central City had to change its mind because we have a contractual relationship. The land board cannot simply say, okay, we will grant Aurora
access. It's a contractual obligation to serve a development that doesn't even exist now and perhaps may not for some time, with nobody knowing how many units there may be and what the water demand would be, right? For 100 years.
We have outside the record in this case information about what the units that were planned for the six sections that the land board currently plans to develop. All of that, it is, however, as you point out, for future use. Nonetheless, we have two parties with contractual obligations to each other. Neither one is free, as Central City's council was, simply to change its mind to allow Aurora in. There is more on top of it. So Aurora says, well, gee, Rangeview could change its mind, and that would open the door. Well, it doesn't open the door yet. We have to pile another few layers of speculation and conjecture about people changing their minds. If Rangeview changes its mind, the land board has to change its mind. The land board has to determine that all of this is consistent with its obligations under the school trust to maximize revenue for education in
Colorado. Mr. Fendall, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but at least the way I've read the land board order, I thought they said specifically that if you guys work it out, it's okay with me. Am I wrong about that?
Let's see what the order says.
So I thought they handed the ball to you.
The order says, the board, I'm reading from the last paragraph of the land board order 63. Therefore, the board cannot consider Aurora's request to build a reservoir on the Lowry Range now or any time in the future as proposed in case number 03 CW415 until a joint agreement has been negotiated. So what the board has said is not, as you summarized, that if you make an agreement, it's okay with us. The board has said, if you make an agreement, you're in the door to talk to us. Board has said that's a prerequisite to our consideration of granting a right-of-way to Aurora. I don't think the board has waived its right or responsibilities to then consider that obligation on its own, that application on its own merits. So it's not quite as straightforward as your question suggests.
Mr. Fendall, before I let you get back to wherever you want to go, let me ask you one more question here. I can see with regard to the other opposers why they might be nervous, but could you explain to me, if you are right, and do you all hold the ultimate decision-making power about whether this project could ever be completed, what's your motivation? Maybe let me phrase that differently. How are you prejudiced or how are you disadvantaged by Aurora getting a conditional water right here? And as you phrase that, let me just say, partly what I have in mind is Aurora sort of accuses you of doing this as a bargaining tactic in your negotiation.
Aurora definitely accuses Rangeview of that based on the transcript of the conference call that was submitted in an affidavit with its reply on its motion to reconsider. I think that's a stretch when you look at what the actual words are to characterize that as Rangeview saying this is simply a negotiating ploy. If you read the words, it says Rangeview was saying there are these negotiations going on and the parties, many of the parties are taking positions for that purpose. To say that he was indicting his own negotiating tactics is a stretch.
But isn't there a suggestion there that the reason you're opposing this is you would rather be in a position to negotiate with somebody who doesn't have a conditional water right with that priority date rather than someone who does?
Rangeview has these four reservoir sites as its storage locations to meet its obligations to serve the Lowry Range and to help it with its right to serve elsewhere.
But they're all senior priorities to the Aurora's.
Aurora has other options off the Lowry Range.
Well, would you just to supplement that?
Yes.
Isn't it plain that in this case that Rangeview would have senior water storage priorities over Aurora? Is that true or not?
Yes.
It is true.
Their priority dates are senior, although they're from a different source.
Okay, but the right to utilize those structures, you have the right of way, and you have a senior conditional water right. So in effect, what Aurora's, if they were to get a decreed storage right for one or more of these sites, would be junior to Rangeview, correct?
Its water rights would be junior to Rangeview.
Okay, so.
The question was, what's in it for Rangeview? What's in it for Rangeview is we would prefer not to have to share the reservoirs, especially with an unwilling and unfriendly co-owner.
But according to your argument, isn't that always within your power simply by not negotiating a deal with them?
I think that's true.
So why is it important for you to block them from getting a conditional decree?
It doesn't change the need for Aurora to deal with Rangeview or the land board. The existence of the decree in a political world is a step forward. It's momentum. And Rangeview is a small provider dealing with a large city, a large entity, the city of Aurora and the state of Colorado. And when politics gather momentum, it's awfully easy to simply brush aside or step on the little players.
And so to complete that thought, then I take it, so what you're saying is you would be under greater pressure to make a less beneficial deal?
And the land board would too. Let Rangeview, we have control of how we negotiate that. The pressure doesn't change. The land board would also be under greater pressure.
And that suggests then that as a legal matter, you think there may be some question about whether the land board could make this arrangement without your agreement. Is that right?
I don't think so. I'd rather not fight them about it.
Okay.
They're on my side at the moment. I want to keep.
See, what concerns me about this entire line of questions is that instead of talking about the law of can and will, we seem to be talking about water battles going out on the plains. And is that what the trial would be about? Is this negotiation that's taking place and whether it's successful and whether you'd like to be in a better place? Or
the trial is about whether or not Aurora can meet the requirements it needs to meet to obtain a conditional decree.
All right.
The trial is about whether it can prove a substantial probability of can and will.
Well, it concerns me that somehow there's a suggestion that in order to figure out can and will, we now have to look at everyone, all of the players' motivations in taking a position in a lawsuit. What's your comment with respect to that?
My comment is that the water judge didn't need to do that to make the decision that he did, which was the correct decision, and avoids all that issue. And it's a correct decision on the interpretation of the lease. It's a correct decision on the law of non-exclusive easements. It's a correct decision on utilizing this court's precedent on the can and will statute. The need to prove that you can and will obtain access to the property is well established in FWS in West Elk. And Aurora failed here on these sites. When you pull back and look at the argument we present, obviously there are complexities that we've explored here and details and nuances to go into. But at its simplest core form, the question is, can the land board give access to Aurora where it's already given access to Rangeview? There's already going to be.
Well, I would have thought that what we're really trying to inquire into here is the proper statutory construction of a couple of statutes that come into play here. Conditional water rights,
yes.
Priority of conditional water rights, the ability to probably succeed in your project by lining up all the permits and financing and getting access to so on, plus this statute that says that state agencies, which include the land board, shall cooperate to the maximum extent practical to provide reservoir sites on state land, right? So what we're really about here is how is all that mix coming together here, and whether or not the final no, which would preclude proceeding with a junior conditional decree for maybe three sites on Aurora's standpoint, why shouldn't it go to the next stage, which is diligence on both parties, with your party having a senior conditional right and the right of way to be able to construct on one or more of these sites, with the possibility that either there's going to be an agreement or there can actually be a fallout because you choose one of them and two of them are available, or the possibility of the combination of two public entities actually saving ratepayers and taxpayers money by cooperating.
The question takes us back to the tension you discussed with Mr. Sims between the idea that a conditional water right is a confirmation that the first step has been taken in an appropriation and all the rest of the steps after the first one need to follow, with the new policy enacted in the Canon Will statute that the applicant has to show a substantial probability of all those things happening up front. And the water judge, I think, didn't find as a fact that Aurora would wait till the end of the lease. The water judge concluded that since the lease doesn't give the land board the opportunity, while it is in effect, to allow Aurora into these sites, that is the result, that Aurora must wait and see. And what you are proposing, I believe, Your Honor, would be reviving that wait-and-see approach. We will allow this to play out in diligence rather than requiring Aurora to prove it up front, as the Canon Will statute requires. Thank you.
On behalf of the court, I want to thank counsel for your arguments. The case will stand submitted. And